As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Okay, James, big weekend for the Leafs. Lots to talk about, lots to discuss, some good, some bad. Really, honestly, good should be the overwhelming theme of the day based on the wins that they had over Boston, Carolina, back-to-back nights. I think we were looking at this back-to-back a few days ago and being like, oh boy, this is about as tough a back-to-back as you can have early in the season. Then Ilya Samsonov gets hurt. Midway through that game against Boston, it's like, oh boy. And yet they come away with two really big wins. What was your takeaway from the weekend?
It's a good thing they didn't fire the coach, Jonas. It's a good thing. It's a good thing they didn't blow it up.
That's your serious takeaway?
That's not my... You know, it's... The whole week, you include the Philadelphia game. They go 3-0, but there were a lot more instances where you were like, okay, yeah, this is what this team is supposed to look like, and this is how they're supposed to play. And even the Carolina game, like, that's almost a schedule loss, right? Like, it's you're going in,
oh yeah,
back to back on the road. The game starts at 5 o'clock. Like, they just finished playing at 10 o'clock. The night before.
Yeah, but remember, okay, like, you have to mention the time change. Like, they did gain an hour, so it was like a 6 o'clock start, basically.
Okay. Okay.
And come on.
Yeah, I know, but like, flying to Carolina, which is not close, and then playing the next night, nope, against, and you're missing your two goaltenders, and you're playing basically an NHL guy. You know, you look at all of those factors, it's like, boy, if they can get a point out of this, or if they can just, you know, and I would say the Hurricanes carried the balance of play in that game, but Toronto held their own, and, you know, they did what they needed to do to win that game on the road. And part of, you know, watching that Carolina game, part of what stood out to me is that the Leafs game breakers just came through right when they needed them to. Like, they just, you know, Marner with the pass to Tavares, and then Nylander obviously gets the goal that he does. And, you know, they were able to hang in the game until their big guys were able to break through and get a couple of goals and win the game. And that's what they weren't getting enough of in the first, you know, 9-10 games of the season.
100%. And so we're going to get into what's going on with the goalies. We're going to talk about the D. We'll talk about the greatest player on the team, Dennis Malgin. But we should start with what you're mentioning. I was going to, like, as you were talking, I was thinking, like, the better win was the Boston game. Like, that was a really impressive game. That's the best game they played all season. It's not even close. But maybe the more impressive win is actually the Carolina game, just because of how things were going, who's playing in net, everything you mentioned about travel. Like, to kind of hang around in that game. They didn't give up really anything. Like, they didn't generate anything for half the game, but they didn't give up anything. And you think of, like, how do you survive for however long with a third string goalie? That's kind of how you do it, right? Like, you kind of lock down and not really force him to be great or even good. Like, he was fine.
How much do you think, like, the team plays differently with Sjogren in the net and like, it's almost like it's more like a collapse mentality or something like that?
I wonder if it's almost like it's not something you're intentionally doing, but it's like subconsciously, like, you're thinking, like, we kind of have to play it safe because we have this guy who's young, inexperienced, unproven in the net. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And full marks to Sjogren. You know, the thing I think about him, Jonas, is that, you know, the experience level and, like, technique and everything, that is not really necessarily NHL level every game, but he doesn't seem to get really rattled the way that some young goalies would. Like,
good point.
You put him in against Boston and it's like, okay, maybe he's not going to be, like, the most technically sound guy, but he's also not flopping all over the place and, like, getting really, like, he seems to be able to keep his composure is what seems to be one of the hallmarks of his play. So, you know, if the Leafs can play reasonably well defensively, they have a chance to win some of these games as he battles in the crease.
It's a really good point because, like, that first goal he gives up, like, that's a bad goal. That's not even, like, anything. And you could see, like, a goalie in his situation, he'd played, I think, 18 games in the NHL to that point. You could see a guy kind of crumbling at that point and kind of melting down. The next shot beats him and it's like, oh boy. But he didn't. He was kind of just like, he just kind of carried on. He didn't allow, obviously, another goal. He didn't face a ton like we're talking about, but, like, there were some chances. And maybe that's, I don't know, like, you look back to last year, like, he didn't play great, but he kind of just did enough for them to be able to win. You know what I mean?
What's his save percentage up to on the season now? Like, he's probably, I think he was 884 coming into the game. Like, he's probably getting to the point where the numbers getting respectable. He's at 904. I mean, that's pretty solid. I mean, if your third guy can give you a 904, then you're doing okay.
Well, over the weekend he stops 36 of 37 shots. Obviously the 7 in relief of Samsonov. So let's talk about that, because the goaltending situation, I mean, it's still not great, what's going on. We don't know as of this recording, like, by the time people listen to this, you may know how long Ilya Samsonov is going to be out. He'll miss at least a week. He's on IR. We don't know when Matt Murray's going to be back. He's supposed to join the team at Tuesday's morning skate, but, like, it's still TBD. It's still not a great place to be in, especially, like, you think, well, Matt Murray's coming back, everything's going to be okay. It's like, I don't know what they're going to be able to get from Matt Murray. I don't know if Matt Murray's going to be able to stay healthy. Like, there's,
well, even
the
if
goal, the crease
Murray
right now
back,
is still,
yeah.
Yeah.
Even with Murray back, I was going to say you can only play him in, like, half the games, right? Like, you can't, he can't just come in and play every game. I mean, he's missed a big chunk of time. So, if Samsonov's injury is more than a week or two, then Sjogren's here for quite a long period of time, and he's going to need to continue to battle and kind of figure things out at the NHL level on the fly here.
Yeah, so he'll presumably start the Vegas game. I would think he starts again against Pittsburgh on the Friday. Is it Friday or Saturday? It's Friday. And then they play again on Saturday against Vancouver. So that's either Petrozilli or Murray. Probably not Murray. He's probably next week.
I guess struggling Vancouver is the game that you give against the... your less experienced quote unquote guy. Sjogren's going to have his 20 games by then, so he's miles ahead of Petrozelli.
Yeah, he's like the grizzled vet.
Yeah, of the crease.
But do you remember
time when they've had two goalies that have played under 20 NHL games as their two netminders?
No, I can't remember. Can you? Like, I mean, there was a time when, like, Bebo was backing up but never played.
Right.
Trying to think who else there would have been.
Well, like,
no,
maybe, like, when Scriven first came in or something. Remember when, like...
When it would have been, like, Scriven Sparks? Was that a thing? Were they...
I don't think they were together, were they? Who was Sparks' backup when some of those games in that anyway, but like, you know, you've been around the team 17 years, and I don't think we've seen two rookies in the crease.
No, it's not a good situation to be in, obviously. And so I've been thinking about this like over the weekend, and I wrote after the game on Saturday that like, and this is something I think we talked about in the summer. I think it was something I wrote in the summer that I always thought it was kind of a mistake not to get someone more experienced in the three position, just because A, Chalgren had barely played and hadn't played like especially great. And B, like you had Matt Murray, who has been hurt all the time. And so like you're kind of setting it up for him to get hurt, and you're going to have to use this other guy.
Do you think
it's fair to say that they should have gone out and got someone who was a little more experienced than Chalgren in the summer to be their three, or no?
Do you think what they were thinking, Jonas, is that Joseph Wall was going to be...
Like, but he's the same thing. Like, he's never... Like, no, he played, like, four games.
But maybe they were thinking, like, one of Wall or Chalgren, whoever's playing better, deserves an opportunity. They don't want to bring in some veteran guy that's going to block those guys. And then Wall gets hurt. I can't remember the timeline when Joseph Wall needed the surgery and whatever, and how much time there would have been to kind of pivot what they were doing with the Marlies. But the other thing too is, remember that 1 year, 2 years ago, they tried to go to have a better number three with Aaron Dell, and they just couldn't get him through waivers. Like they just lost him. And
yeah,
that's one of the tricky things with that third goalie, is that often most of them require waivers to go through. And if there's a team around the league that has an injury, they can get claimed really easily. So even if they would have had a veteran guy there to come in as the number three, there's no guarantee they would have been able to hang on to him.
Fair, but that at least suggests that it's something you can try to do, you should try to do. Like, I mean, I guess the question boils down to, in some ways, is Aaron Dell, even though he's played many games in the league, is he any better than Chalgren? I don't know. Like, and maybe they're just thinking to themselves, we've done the Michael Hutchinson thing. We've done what you suggested with Dell. We traded for David Riddick at the deadline, yeah, and he was bad. Like, why are we going to invest resources in someone who might not be any better? And yeah, like you can come into a situation like this where it's like, oh my God, like what if this guy who's never played in the league kind of unravels?
I think they liked Petruzzelli too, and I know that that's not like a good plan for your NHL crease. But no. I think if you're thinking of, like, I think they wanted him to play in the HL, not in the ECHL, right? They wanted him to get games there. They feel like he's got some ability. He was a high third round pick for the Detroit 5 years ago, and a really good goaltender in the NCAA, and he's 6'6", and it's something you have to balance when you're an NHL team with your goalies, is that you don't want to block your young guys because you're worried about I guess the only counterpoint to that is that Matt Murray's injury history is a big factor in all of this. And
yeah,
I think that Jonas coming into the year, like they had in the back of their mind, like we might need to acquire like a real NHL goaltender at some point during the season, based on how this goes with these two guys.
Yeah. And based on what's happened now, do you think that
it depends
should be something that they do?
It depends how long Samsonov's out. Like if he's only out a week, then no. If Samsonov's out, I would say 4 or 5 weeks or more. I was texting you after the game. I was like, boy, I don't know. That didn't look very good. Like just the way he bent over the knee and everything. But you pointed out that he played, you know, through to the end of the period. So,
and not just like 2 minutes, like 15 minutes.
Yeah, so it's hard to know how long he's going to be out here. If he tore his knee all up, then it could be quite a long time.
What would worry me if I were them is like, even if both guys come back, like the Murray thing, like would really kind of freak me out. It's like he's made one start and he was hurt. Like, what are you going to be able to get from him, and how much? Like, I don't know that. I guess you've kind of committed to this plan. There's nothing you can do, but it kind of would make me think, you know what, maybe we should get someone who's a little more experienced, because like, we don't know what we're going to be able to get from Matt Murray. We don't know how much he's going to play. Like we talked about this, I think before the year, like this is not going away. The goalie situation is going to be a year long conversation, right?
What do you do, though? Do you just, like, carry three guys at certain points of the season? I mean, I guess...
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess you could acquire a guy and just put him on waivers, and if you lose him, you lose him. I don't know.
You could probably waive Murray, too. Like, I don't think anyone's going to claim him, right? So, like, if he plays some games with... Like, he played some games in the AHL when he was with the Senators. Like, maybe he's coming back from injury.
And was not...
You know, you put him with the Marlies for a couple weeks, or if you have three guys... The one situation that's interesting is what's going on in Vegas. I was talking to our beat writer, Jesse Granger, who does a great job covering the Golden Knights. And, you know, they've got a three-goalie situation coming there where they've got the kid, Logan Thompson, who's played really, really well. They traded a pick for Aiden Hill from San Jose to be their backup. And then they have Laurent Brossoit, who is coming back. And so they're going to have three goaltenders. They got a relatively tight cap situation. I think that, you know, in a perfect world, Vegas would like to trade Brossoit, who makes 2.35 or something in that neighborhood, which is a lot for the Leafs to take on, I think. But, you know, so that's one situation where, and Ottawa's another team, you know, with Talbot being back healthy now, they've got three goalies as well. Part of what you do, Jonas, is you watch the waiver wire, and, you know, it often happens where teams are bringing guys up and sending them through waivers, and you see goalies on waivers quite a bit.
Well, and your point to me was, I mean, one of those Vegas guys could be on waivers any day now, right? Like, they're going to have to do something.
Yeah, but I think...
Don't they?
I think if you're doing that, I think if you're Toronto, you don't claim them on waivers. You try and make a trade with them where they retain some of the salary would be what I would try and do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
I would call Vegas and say... And you could wait till Brossoit's probably going to clear waivers at his salary and coming off an injury and everything. Clears waivers, goes down, and then Vegas is carrying, you know, $1.2 million on their cap, and you say, hey, will you retain some of this, and we'll take them. You know, if the Leafs could get a guy like that in at, like, 1.4 or 1.5, it might make a lot of sense. Because even if even if he ends up with the Marlies or whatever, it's not going to hurt your cap situation.
Well, and I know your point, like, about you don't want to block the young guy, but, like, you don't have to play him a bunch with the Marlies. Like, it's just you play him, I don't know, every third game just to kind of keep him in the mix. And then, like, if you need him, like, you're not calling up a guy who's played 17, 18 games and a guy who's never played in the league. You know what I mean? Like, Petrozilli's, like, barely played in the AHL. Like, he has no experience. He's just college.
Undefeated. Do you know when Joseph Woll is supposed to be back? Was it shoulder surgery? Like, it was a pretty significant.
But again, James, that's the same thing.
No, you just want to, like, give ice time to these guys, right? Like, if all of a sudden they've got Chagrin and Petrozelli and Woll all looking for starts, it can feel a bit crowded down there.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, they do have the ECHL. But yeah, fair point.
We got to get back. Anyway, we got to get back to Newfoundland. The show that we did from there is one of the all-time highlights of the podcast.
That feels like 9 years ago, like the amount of stuff that's happened. The amount of stuff that's happened already this fall, like training camp seems like it was like 6 months ago, and it was not.
I think maybe we've exhausted goalie talk.
It's time for a break, yeah.
It was interesting to see Freddie Anderson give up the goals that he did there to decide the game the Leafs' favor.
That was reminiscent of... some of the stuff you saw with Freddie Anderson in Toronto. We should talk about that for a second, James. That Nylander play, like, that is...
It was awesome.
That's impressive. Like, that...
He's up against the best defensive defenseman in the league.
Well, and, like, it would have been very easy for him in that situation to just be like, you know what, there's nothing happening here. But, like, he persists and persists and persists, and, like, That puck has to be stopped, but, like, that he wins that play and wins that goal just through sheer determination, which is not something, like, he's necessarily known for. So when you see it, you're like, yeah,
well,
pretty impressive.
I call him William Stielander because he does have the...
Oh, do you?
He does have the ability to strip the puck like that sometimes. Like, I think he doesn't get enough credit for how good he can be in those situations.
Agreed. All right, let's take a break, and then I want to talk a little bit about some of those top six guys. We got to talk about your guy, Dennis Malgin, and I want to talk a little bit about the defense, and then we'll get to the pod bag.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, James, you mentioned off the top that their star players are starting to come through for them. You know, John Tavares scores that goal. It's set up by Mitch Marner. You mentioned the Nylander goal. Matthews had scored in five straight before the Carolina game. And yet, I still don't think those guys are totally going just yet. What's your sense of I guess, their top four forwards?
Well, Tavares has had a really good start. I like the way that Nylander looks in terms of his skating. Matthews, you know, some of the goals are starting to fall, and I think with that's going to come, he's going to be in the rhythm and confident and everything. You know, last year the big guys started slow too, so I don't know if that's a thing or why that would be the case, but you know, the funny thing too, Jonas, is it's not like they've like really changed anything up on them. Like, they got the, you know, Bunting still there. They're playing Kerfoot back with Tavares and Nylander again. Like, it's not like they have a new line mate or something to get used to, or a new system or a new coach, or like there shouldn't be an adjustment period, but for whatever reason it looks like there is. Maybe like the power play, that you can tell that they've changed quite a bit there, but it hasn't really been the power play where their lack of scoring has been really evident. It's really been even strength where they've had a hard time breaking through.
Yeah, I don't really think we've seen... I guess what I'm saying is Marner and Matthews, to me, have not looked like the Marner and Matthews of last year. And that line has not looked... The numbers, like... James, what's weird is like the numbers basically look pretty similar. Defensively, they've been worse. They're not generating quite as much. I don't think they've been like on the hunt as much as last year, where they're like turning pucks over they constantly haven't. And creating chances off that.
I got a stat for you. Can I throw a stat in?
Go ahead. So, yeah, I love it.
So last three games possession, Marner is at 45.7% and Bunting is at 43.4%. So when you have that first line, like that's towards the bottom on the team. There's not that many guys below them. Bunting's 18th on the... I mean, we're only looking at a three-game sample size, but
yeah,
those big games, they win the three in a row, they're not really heavily controlling play with their best players on the ice, their top line on the ice, which is unusual.
Yeah, and that's how it feels. Like, I'm glad you brought that up, because like I had looked at after like two periods in that Carolina game, and Marner was at like 10% or something, and obviously Keith changed around the lines midway through the game.
Guess Jonas on the team who's number one over the last three games.
I know this. It is my friend Dennis Malgin.
Yeah, well, good for him. All right, so
we'll talk about that in a second.
Okay.
Yeah, I wrote about Marner on Monday morning. He doesn't look the same as he did in the second half last year. Like, it really is sticking out to me. He doesn't have the puck as much. He's not as clean with the puck when he does have it. He's not shooting it as much. And it's like easy to forget like just how amazing he was in the second half last year. And it's like, if they can get that guy back, obviously their ceiling is raised and that line is raised. And we just haven't seen that. And we haven't seen the best of Matthews yet. And like, it is early, but it is notable that those two guys, it doesn't feel like it's clicking the same, and I wonder if they should keep this up and keep them apart for a little bit, because it feels a little stale, to be honest.
You know what's interesting is that it kind of looks like Bunting is the
yeah
well his numbers are I'm looking at expected goals now the last three games. He's at 35%, you know, and the other guys are higher. Like Matthews is closer to 50% when he's on the ice, but, you know, and again, small sample size and everything, but I don't, it's really unusual to see Marner not controlling play. Like it's not unusual for him to have some dry spells in terms of point production and things like that, but for them to just not be spending a lot of time in the offensive zone,
yeah,
it's pretty surprising. And it's part of why I think, you know, they've had the possession and the issues with controlling the scoring chances most of the season, and the top line not being the 60% or whatever they were at last year where they were completely dominant. That's a big part of that.
So what would you do? Keep them apart for a little bit?
Yeah, I don't mind. I think every time you see Marner out there with Tavares, like, I mean, look at the goal that they scored. Look at the move that Marner made there, and Tavares is right there. There's something about those two that works well together. You know, you get the guy that can really dangle and move around the perimeter and open space, and then you have the guy who just can convert on good looks every time. Not that Matthews can't, but that Tavares is a weapon if you get him right in the house there, like right in front of the net.
Well, and he looks, he struggled obviously in the second half last year, and I was concerned about that coming into the year. He looks great. Like the fact that like he's a little quicker seems to really make a difference. His hands look, I mean, as good as they've looked since he's been in Toronto. Like he's been dangerous. When anything is around the net, like it feels like he's converting or at least generating a really good opportunity off of that. It's just like, if you're going to do it, James, I kind of feel like you need to let these guys know that we're going to give this some life. Like, I kind of think sometimes what I've seen from Marner when he plays with Tavares in like these short stints, that it feels like it zaps a little bit of something from him. Like it feels maybe it feels like a little bit of a demotion that you're not playing with Matthews.
Well, those guys love playing together. I mean, that's part of what, And they both had the monster season last year. So
I mean, yeah, to that point, like Mark Masters was asking Marner last week about, you know, Sheldon Keefe basically said, like, he's not going to break you guys up yet, but like, blah, 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 blah. And Marner basically said, like, why would you break us up? Like, we're amazing. Like, we generate lots of chances. But it's like, I don't know. I kind of think it might be time just to put that on pause. And I'd like to see Nylander with Matthews for a little bit. And you mentioned Bunting, like he was sat down for a little bit after he took that penalty, and he wasn't the guy who ended up with Tavares and Marner. That was Robertson. Like he was playing with Yarncroc and Engvall. So clearly, like you're saying, like he's not had the same effect as last year.
So Tavares is tied for 16th in NHL scoring early on, 15 points. And leading the Leafs. I mean, that's one of the good news stories of the Leafs season so far, is the way that he's played. And one of the things that, you know, the organization has talked about, and I think Tavares has talked about as well, is that because of the injury he had in the Montreal series, his offseason a year ago wasn't as good as this year. So, you know, credit to him for the work that he's put in to get to where he is right now. And it'd be pretty interesting if he can keep this up. I mean, right now he's 3 points up on Marner and 4 points up on Matthews. And I don't know, you know, if Tavares has like a 90-point season or something like that at you know, year five of the contract? It's hard to believe he's been in Toronto that long. That's certainly something I don't think a lot of people were predicting coming into the year.
No, that would be a huge deal for them. I mean, yeah, and he's been, obviously, a lot of those points have come on the power play. He's been excellent on the power play. That's one part of his game where it's like, that should remain potent for the next few years, just because he is so good around the net. Let's talk about Malgin. Not a sentence I thought I would ever be saying. I texted you midway through that game against Carolina that he was their best player. And I was like, my mind is blown. Oh my God.
We've got 33 minutes left on the podcast, and I think that most of those should be Malgin. So where do you want to start?
I mean, I'm blown away that this is happening. Like, because the start of the year, it kind of felt like it was the same thing that was happening before, like in that brief stint after the trade.
Right? I had people around the league that were watching with other teams. They're like, what? Like, you can't, people were saying, you can't have Robertson and Malgin on the team. Like, it's two small, skilled guys that just, you know, it's the same thing with the Leafs going with like the small, skilled guys. And then, you know, what's the funny thing is that where Malgin looks the best is with David Kempf on like a checking right? line.
That's insane, James. Like I mentioned it on Monday, the shots for them, they've played like 22 and a half minutes, I think. The shots for the Leafs are 19-3 when those guys are out there. That's insane.
Sheldon Keefe puts that line together for the Philadelphia game, right? Was that the first game that they played together? And the lineup, yeah. the lineup comes out and you see it and you're like, okay, Malgin.
What the hell?
Malgin's playing with Kempf and Aston Reese. Like, how long is that going to last? And like, what is the purpose of that line? Like, David Kempf is your checker. Do we really think that Dennis Malgin can be out there on a checking line? But then, you know, again, you know, like we said off the top, like all of the, you look at the possession numbers last three games, the top three guys on the team are those three guys. And they haven't really been, I mean, they've been getting a lot of defensive zone starts. Like they've been playing a lot in the D zone. And I don't know, Jonas.
Yeah, James,
do you think it's like easy minutes against, that they're getting or?
No. Yeah. So against Carolina, that line plays 10 minutes and 3 seconds. They have zero offensive zone faceoffs. They have literally finished the night with a 0% offensive zone faceoff percentage. And yet they finish at over 70% expected goals. And they're not like, so the Boston game, like they're not always getting the toughest matchups. Like in that Boston game, Matthews was facing Bergeron, but like they're not sheltering them. Like Malgin's been, he's been like feisty. And I can't remember who I talked to when I was on the road and they'd mentioned that Malgin, when he was in Florida, that was kind of who he was. Like he was kind of physical. He was like kind of a pest. And like we hadn't seen that guy in that really brief stint when he got traded here.
No, he just looks like a guy that's just like had no confidence and like would get the puck and just get rid of it right away. And like he really didn't look like much of anything the last time we saw him play in Toronto.
Yeah. And so I'm looking at the Carolina game on Natural Stat Trick, like that, their line basically faced mostly the Carolina second line, like Svechnikov, Kotkaniemi, Natchez, Jarvis. Like
the Leafs aren't practicing today on Monday, but correct me if I'm wrong. No one has anyone asked Keefe about the Malgin resurgence?
I guess who did, James? I did before the weekend. And basically he said exactly what we're talking about. Like it's kind of surprising that he's had the success where he's had it. But he said what Malgin has really helped with is like he's been really attuned defensively. And his skill also helps him defensively because when there's a puck to get out of the zone, like he's helping them to, he gets it out. And also when they're on offense, like he's skilled enough that he's keeping them on offense a little bit longer. And like Aston Reese has really come on here. Like we can talk, and I actually forgot to put it on the schedule, but we can talk about Abe Kubel, but like he's kind of Malgin and or Aston Reese kind of helped lead to Abe Kubel going on waivers and leaving. Like, they had hoped that the line would be Aston Reese, Kempf, Abe Kubel, and the numbers for that threesome were like terrible.
Well, Abe Kubel just like looked completely out of place. Like
Well, let's talk about that for like 2 minutes because I think it's very, 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 very surprising to waive a guy you sign on the first day of free agency for $1 million, 6 games into his career with you. That suggests that there is something that they really did not like. I don't know what it is, but no, like, isn't it weird?
You kind of mentioned that it seemed like in the dressing room that he seemed a little bit out of sorts. And then, but I just, on the ice, there were just some of the decisions he was making and even just like positioning when he was out there. And I just wasn't sure what he was doing. So I don't know. Part of it is, Jonas, like they're at the contract limit. They needed to shed somebody. Maybe they did offer him up around as a trade. I mean, there's not really anything. They didn't really lose anything. I'm just surprised that they wouldn't try and hang on to a guy like that and keep him as your 13th forward. I guess they've decided.
At least, right, James, like 6 games into his career, like you've seen enough. Like you don't think he can add any value. And yet, I mean, like a few months ago, he was one of the first guys you signed. Like that's weird to me. I like him. He did not show anything. You're right. It's just like, I look at their bottom six guys and it's like, I still don't totally know what they have.
If they run into injuries, then it might be like, all of a sudden you're playing some guys that, you know, like they played Holmberg in a game and like they're going to be, I don't know, maybe they feel better about some of the guys in the Marlies. Like I know Joey Anderson's played well down Joey there Anderson. And like they've had some guys with the Marlies off to good starts. So maybe they feel like they've got enough depth that waiting for Abe Kubel to figure it out isn't something that they really need to do. It's a good thing that they did free up the contract slot because that was the only that was the only way they were able to sign the goalie.
Yeah, crazy timing on that, huh?
They knew. Spidey sense.
Yeah. They knew Samsonov was going to get hurt. The only other thing I wanted to mention before we get to the bod bag is it's crazy. So, like, I wrote after the LA game where Justin Hall had that really tough night. He took a couple penalties. He was on for a couple goals against. I wrote, like, they need to do something. Like, they have to put him back with Brody because, like, this isn't working. And they changed the pairings the next game. And ever since then, the Brody Hall combination has just been like lights out. I just am astounded. Like Brody, he's just like the fix it man. Like it's like all of a sudden Hall's playing with him, and like you don't notice Hall anymore.
Well, it seems like Hall. It's nuts. It's like when Muzzin was playing well, he was like kind of
good call.
It's like his confidence is just completely different when he has a partner who he feels like he can 100% trust. So. We should talk about the blue line a little bit. I mean, the other thing that happened this week is they get Liljegren back. Liljegren's first game is a really tough one against Boston. They put him on the first pair with Morgan Rielly, and it's like, well, I don't know about this against Boston. And he plays really, really well. So, you know, that's another... You know, the blue line looked so out of sorts for the first 10 games of the season. And part of it is, you're missing Muzzin, you're missing Liljegren, and, you know, for all the talk about how well the blue line played last year, it's probably not good. I mean, they're missing Lyubushkin too. It's probably not good enough to subtract two or three guys and still be the caliber that it was last year.
No. And now things for Rielly and Liljegren did not go as well against Carolina. But to me, James, like what you could really notice is Liljegren could really move the puck, and like suddenly you add him to Rielly and it's like, yeah, that kind of makes some sense. Like, they had kind of been cycling through like Mete and like...
Yeah, I just worry about like holding the blue line and like clearing the front of the net.
Yeah,
and
coming off an injury. Yeah, well, that clearing the front of the net is kind of was like, to me, like his biggest issue last year, right?
Yeah, it was like a Sandin Liljegren issue that they were getting beat. And that's part of why you can't play those two guys together. But if he can move the puck as well as he did on the weekend... I mean, it'll be interesting to see how his minutes go and like what kind of competition they use him against. And they still don't, I guess you're thinking Brody and Hall is your shutdown pair, but it doesn't really.
They are.
Yeah. I mean, I think that if you get another right shot defenseman, you spend some of the money that you've got from Jake Muzzin on LTIR, then all of a sudden, I think you've got something with this blue line. Like if you can get another top four guy into the mix, I think you're in a good spot.
Well, can you just mention some of those guys you brought up in your story last week, just about potential guys that they could add?
Yeah, I mean, some of them, I like some of them more than others. I mean, I think we've talked about Klingberg. I mean, he's not exactly what they need. Chychrun is the one a lot of people are excited about, but he's a left shot and he's going to cost you a fortune to acquire. He's had lots of injuries. I would be a little bit worried about Chychrun. And then there's some like less sexy guys. Like there's...
Scott Mayfield.
Yeah, well, that would be ideal.
Don't say Goss Despair.
Well, I'm just saying like who's potentially available that you're not going to have to pay a lot to get. That's the thing is like, I mean, like Shattenkirk is someone. I was just looking at Justin Braun's a guy we've talked about quite a bit. I mean, even if you're getting someone like him in there that can be a second/third pair guy that plays on the PK and gives you a different element, I think maybe potentially that's something that you're looking for. Jordy Benn's up with the Leafs, so you know he might get mixed in here for an opportunity soon.
It has to be someone who's better than what they have. would be the only qualification. Like, Gostisbehere is not better than who they have. I mean, one of the guys you'd mentioned was Klingberg. It's like,
Well, it's not really the style of defenseman that they need, right? I mean, yeah, Kulikov's another name that I had on the list. I mostly just went down the list of you know who would be fantastic, and I don't know that they're looking to trade him, is Gavrikov in Columbus, I think would be really, really good.
Yeah, and he is used to playing tough minutes.
They're not good defensively.
Good. Doesn't make much, I don't think.
He's like 2.8, I think, but he's going to be a UFA, and Columbus is bad, and like... I think you'd probably have to give up something pretty good to get him because he's definitely a top four guy. He can definitely play against other teams' top lines, bring some physicality. Remember that series when the Leafs played against Columbus? Gavrikov was a real problem. They call him the octopus, I think. Like he's really, really hard to handle down low in the defensive zone. So I know I'm pretty sure the Blue Jackets would like to keep him, but you know, if you start dangling, you'd probably have to, like I said, you have to give up a good prospect or a first round pick to get him. But he's the kind of player that would be like an upgraded version of Lyubushkin, really.
I like that. Yeah, good one. Punch Our producer notes that Justin Hall got the player of the game thing after the Carolina game.
They got
the belt.
They got a wrestling belt. Apparently, it's from Edge, the wrestler, the local wrestler.
The big Leaf fan, isn't he? He's a big Leaf fan, I think.
I believe so. Yeah, I think he's from Orangeville.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
We should take a break and get to the pod bag.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, James, it's pod bag time. A reminder to support your local businesses. I had a great burger the other day from one of my local businesses in Toronto, Rosie's. Great burgers. That's my plug. Do you have any plugs?
I am lacking in plugs. I got to say, I haven't been hitting that many local restaurants lately. Got to be honest.
Do you know where you should go, James? Are you guys like a big fish and chip family?
I would say no.
Oh, really? That's disappointing.
I would say
there's a really good fish and chips place on the Danforth.
You'll see, Jonas. When you have a 4-year-old, you're not going to like fancy fish and chip places.
Wait. Fish and chips is like the least fancy meal you can get.
Yeah. Well, it's
Len Duckworth. That's the place, James. Anyway, whatever.
Little kids, it's like McDonald's or nothing. Lots of times you go to a restaurant with a little kid and it's like, why did we come here? What were we trying to accomplish here? Were we trying to have a bad night? Because that's what we've done. And we paid a lot of money for it. Someone's under the table. Someone's spilling something. Someone's crying. And you get the bill as fast as you possibly can and chug your glass of wine and drive home and say, let's never do that again. All right. Noah wants to talk about Jake Muzzin. He says it seems like Jake Muzzin might be done for the rest of his career. You know, as a hometown boy, I was happy to see him with the Leafs, but he's his family to think about. Is there a chance the Leafs make a big splash with the cap space and swing on another defenseman for the top four? Yeah, I think so. I mean, I encourage people to read the column I wrote last week talking about this, where, you know, there was a lot of people calling for Sheldon Keefe's head and talking about Barry Trotz. And I said, I really think that the move here is you've got $5.6 million in cap space from Jake Muzzin that you can spend, and where they need help is on defense. And now We'll see if it stabilized here with Logren there and with Hall playing a little bit better. But I still think going into the playoffs, you're going to want an upgrade there.
Yes, agreed. Like, I still look at this group and I think, I don't think that's good enough.
No, I mean, if you want to go four rounds and play against really, really good teams, then you want to upgrade. So, you know, now that there's some cap, I don't think Muzzin's going to be back this year. It's not completely out of the question, but just from what I've heard behind the scenes, it doesn't sound good, unfortunately.
So, James, like, obviously you want Jake Muzzin's life to be okay. That's like the priority. But as for like the team right now without him, are you a little surprised that they haven't dialed things up a little bit more for Mark Giordano? I know he's the oldest defenseman in the league. He's 39. I'm just a little surprised. It's worked out now because Brody Hall has worked, but I'm just a little surprised that he wasn't the first instinct to shore things up. Are you, or is it just he's old?
And, yeah, I think they've realized that they get the most out of him on the third pair as kind of a depth guy, and that's at this stage of his career, that's where he's best to play. I think he's been fine. I mean, I think he's looked really solid, and it'll be interesting to see what they do here as players get healthy. And I don't know, like, Giordano and Liljegren played so well as the third pair last year, but the Leafs don't really have the luxury of doing that again. So it's, I guess you're trying to recapture some of that with Giordano and Sandin playing together, and hoping that Sandin gets, you know, improves his play and can get back to, you know, some of his better games that he had last year.
Yeah, I guess the guy you're really trying to upgrade is Hall, basically, right?
Yeah. I think if you have Hall on your third pair and he's killing penalties and he's playing, you know, 14 minutes a game instead of 20, I think you're in a better spot. And I think if Hall wasn't playing against other teams' top lines, people would not be noticing him as much and would be complaining about him a lot less. It's just you're asking him to do a lot right now.
Yeah, but like, James, like, the last few games he's been playing against top lines with Brody and it's gone great.
I know, but like, I mean, so maybe as like a just playoff solution, someone... I don't like it.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, what else you got?
Warren wants to, and we talked about this a little bit, but I think we can explore it a little bit more. He says, what are the Leafs' options if Samsonov is out for a while? They have cap space, but is there anything available that they would want to pay for? The question for the Leafs is going to be, they're in LTIR. As I said before, Muzzin makes 5.6. They've already spent a little bit of that because Liljegren came back and they didn't subtract anyone from the roster. They've been carrying a bigger roster than the minimum. I think they have, at most, they probably have around $4 million in space. And given the needs elsewhere on the roster, especially on defense, how much of that $4 million, and you don't accrue more cap space when you're in LTIR, how much of that $4 million do you want to spend in goal or up front when your biggest need is potentially on the blue line? So that's going to be the decision for the Leafs, is how do they best use that $4 million?
James, I know a guy in San Jose. Huh?
Huh? Rhyme time?
He's a goalie, yeah.
Yeah.
But that I that only makes sense, like, if you're seeking like a longer term solution.
I think, right? that is something, I mean,
and they don't seem to be that.
Reimer's been available in the past, you know, as a free agent, and he's been someone we've suggested, and I just haven't gotten the sense that this Leafs front office views him as, you know, San Jose is going to, they're down at the bottom of the league. They've made it known around the league that they're willing to trade whoever. I don't know. The question for the Leafs is going to be, they're hoping that they can get through the next, let's say, 2 months of the year without needing to make a deal, and then see what they've got in some players and see how they feel about, you know, Liljegren playing with Riley, and see how they feel about their goalies, and see what Murray does when he gets back, and see how long Samsonov's out, and then make a decision when they have more information about everybody on the roster. But I can see a scenario where you get closer to the trade deadline and it's like, yeah, we would like another goalie, we would like another defenseman, we would potentially like another forward, and they're just not going to be able to fill all of those needs.
I wonder though, James, like as you're talking, I'm thinking ahead to the playoffs, if they almost have to, before the trade deadline, that's obviously a long time away, get another, like, do what they did with Riddick just for security's purpose, just because like of the injury risk with Murray and, you know what I mean? Like just have another guy yep. who's at least playing the league. So if like you get into that situation, you're not staring down at Chalgren.
Well, if it's a Riddick kind of goalie, they're not going to have a big salary and
right.
So, but I just think that, you know, you, like I said, you can't accrue cap space. You probably only have max $4 million unless, I mean, the other thing they could do is they could trade some money out, right? Like they could,
yep.
they could push money out.
Well, if you're trading for a defenseman, like maybe that deal involves Justin Hall. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's really going to depend how he plays over the next couple of months because he's a pending UFA and, but you know, there are ways that they could get creative, but I could see them getting, you know, into the second half of the season and they have multiple needs and they're going to have to really think about. And the other thing they're going to have to think about too, Jonas, and this is early to talk about this, is how willing are they to trade first round picks? How willing are they to trade prospects? You know, how much are they going to push in to go for it this year at the deadline?
Well, man, James, that is a, that's a huge conversation that we'll have to have at some point, because obviously we know their GM doesn't have a contract beyond the season. And so like, is he allowed to carte blanche, like just trade whatever he wants? I don't know. Like that's interesting. And partly why it doesn't make sense not to give him a contract extension beyond the year, but that's a whole other conversation. Anyway.
Well, you do get into some sort of like existential questions over yeah. like, should the GM be allowed to trade his first round pick? You know, it's...
Yeah, he should. But if he's the GM, he's the GM. But yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
It's... From what I can tell, there's some nervousness now about how many first round picks they've traded, and you know that there are people in the organization that feel burned by the Foligno experience and how few.
Well, that's a sunk cost, James. That's all. Like yeah. I don't know that should impact what you do now.
I don't know. I mean, I've heard talk that potentially it does impact, and that, but then you're in a season like this, and it's such an important year, and it's a contending year, and you know you really. You're running towards the end of the Nylander, Matthews, Marner, even Tavares contracts. Like, if you're not going to push in now, assuming they're close to the playoffs, you know, at the trade deadline, or they're firmly in a playoff spot, if you're not pushing in then when are you?
Exactly.
So, there's going to have to be a willingness to trade some assets at some point. Anyway, like I said, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but... Justin M wants to know, do you think the Leafs are still willing to trade Wayne Simmonds to give him a better opportunity somewhere else? Or is he, with Abe Kubel gone, is he just part of the team? I think at some point the Leafs are probably going to get tighter against the cap and not be able to carry the extra forwards the way they are now. And I think it's still really up in the air what happens with Wayne Simmonds.
To me, James, it's more like, is there a team that wants to trade for Wayne Simmonds? Like, it's not like, clearly the Leafs, before they put him on waivers before, offered him around, right? Like, they were willing to trade him. There has to be another team that wants to trade for Wayne Simmonds.
He's right? waiting for, you know, like, if they run into injuries up front, then Simmonds is going to play more. And, I you know, it seems pretty clear he doesn't want to play for the Marlies in the AHL, so... You know, if at some point they need to send him back down again, maybe, you know, like when Murray comes back, like that's a lot of LTIR room that they need to put back in the fold. It's going to get a little bit tighter, especially if they try and acquire another goaltender. There's another question about too many men penalties. I think we already answered that last week, right?
That's like a weekly question.
Yeah. Michael wants to know, do you have any thoughts why the Leafs do this and play down to bad teams and then play up to good teams the way they did against Boston and Carolina? I mean, I think part of it's human nature, right? Like that you're going to gear up, but it is frustrating. Especially it's frustrating because they've done it for so long. Like they've done it for 4 or 5 years and it's something that, you know, the coaching staff is talking about and then they still do it anyway.
Well, it's like,
you think you could course correct on that a little bit?
Well, it's like if they played the way they played against Boston all the time, they would be the best team in the league. Like, but that's, I mean, you're not going to play like a perfect game every night.
But you should be able to beat Arizona every night. Like if you can play like that against Boston, you should beat Arizona. Like we're not.
Yes, that's focus, right? Like that's focus. I think.
So it has to. So be. Why can't they focus?
I don't know. It's a good question. Why it's not been there? It's interesting, like the comparison to Boston, just like over the weekend, and just some of the talk you hear the Leafs talk about Boston. It's like Boston has like this infrastructure and this foundation where it's like they don't have their best defenseman right now, and they're off to this crazy start. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like it's just like there's just something with their
new foundation coach too. Like I thought maybe Boston. Like I think Bruce Cassidy's a great coach. He's doing a great job in Vegas. I thought maybe losing him would potentially cause problems for them, but no, you know, and Boston's always one of those teams. It's like more than the sum of their parts, it feels like. And, you know, Allmark had like a pretty, I would say just an okay year last season. I mean, look how good he's been early on this year. They've got a goalie injury too. Swayman's out right now and they're playing really well. So there's something in the water in Boston where, and Bergeron's like the ageless man. Like it's just amazing how well he was thinking of retiring, and then you look at him out there and it's like, this guy still's got it.
Well, maybe it comes from the top with a guy like him. Like there's something, I don't know, but it's like the Leafs of John Tavares. Like it's not like Tavares isn't every bit as respected that way. So I don't know. It's a strange thing.
James P. has a statement here and then a question. He says, Leafs without Lily equal shit. And then he says, Leafs with Lily equal awesome. Should Liljegren have held out for more money? I think Liljegren's camp was like, we feel good about where we fit into this blue line. We're potentially going to get an opportunity in the top four. We're going to play a lot of minutes. If he establishes himself firmly in the top four over this season and next season, and then comes up as an RFA with Arbrights, you know, if he's playing over 20 minutes a game these two seasons, money's not going to be a problem for him. Like his next contract will be very, very generous.
Yeah. Well, and this contract, it's not like he got underpaid. He had one season in the league.
Yeah. I guess that you could argue.
And they were happy to take that contract.
Yeah. I guess you could argue they could have done a 1-year deal and then he plays really well this year and sets himself up. But
yeah,
if he does it for two seasons, I mean, he could establish himself as like a really key part of the blue line. And then all of a sudden, you look at guys like you look at what a Brody or Muzzin makes, the cap is going up. You know, Liljegren could be looking at, you know, $5 million a year, $4 million a year over a long period of time. And that's life-changing money. So, you know, I think that they played it really well. Matya wants to know, is Justin Hall playable again now that he's playing with Brody? Can the Leafs make it work with those two together, or do they need to try some other pairings? Is there any other switches on the blue line? Like, they're suggesting Sandin with Brody potentially, and Giordano and Hall on the third pair. What do you think of that?
It just goes back to what we were talking about with Giordano. It doesn't feel like number one that they want to stretch Giordano that way, and I don't know what a Sandin Brody like that kind of feels.
Yeah, well. It
like a waste. I don't know what it accomplishes.
Yeah, it doesn't have a purpose, right? Like the what they're looking for right now is they're thinking Brody Hall because they can play that pairing in the D zone. Where the other thing too, Jonas, I don't know about you, but I haven't seen enough from Sandin where I'm like, yeah, I want this. He should be in the top four. He should be playing more minutes. Like I don't know if it was missing the chunk of training camp or if he's just more effective on the third pair or what it is. But Sandin has not really stood out to me and most of the games this year.
Do you think the best signing of the Kyle Dubas era is TJ Brody?
It was maybe one of the most necessary signing. Like
he's just like perfect for what they needed. Like, and we never talk about him because like he's boring. But he's just good.
Reliable.
Like every night.
Yeah.
Reliable. Right.
Yeah. And that's what the Leafs blue line lacked for so many years. You know, you can go back. You can go back since we've been covering the team. I mean, how many just really solid two-way defensemen has this organization had going back to like the Yuskeviches and Danny Markovs? And like, it's one of the things that they haven't had.
I mean, is he the most reliable defenseman? Like, I guess Muzzin? I don't know. Like, he's in the conversation.
Yeah, Muzzin's another good example. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Alex wants to know, by how many votes will Liljegren win the Norris? So people are getting really excited about Liljegren coming back.
I think that's Dom. Dom is like, Dom gave Liljegren a Calder Trophy vote last year, I think fifth on his ballot.
I know.
I told him was crazy.
I know. I think I had him on the all-rookie team. I think he was my second all-rookie defenseman, him and Sider.
Really?
I think so, yeah. Well, who?
Let me see where I had him.
Who would you have?
I had Dursey.
Okay. And Liljegren was really good last year. He was really good last year. So, you know, it was a big step for him. I don't know if you want to answer this one. One question. Ian asks, he wants our thoughts on the narrative that the Leafs lack killer instinct. How would you rate their mental?
Oh, God.
I know. I knew what you were going to say.
You love that
one. I almost skipped it, but I wanted your reaction.
You just wanted to needle me a little bit.
Well, let me, he's got more to the question, so maybe you'll like the rest of it better. How would you rate,
sure.
How would you rate their mental toughness so far this season? Is this something they can improve by swapping one or two players for some so-called character players?
I'm more focused, like, to me, I focus more on tangible-y stuff. Like, I think they need another center. I think they could use an upgrade in their top nine. And I think they have gotten in trouble in the past when they have said we need to add more quote-unquote character guys. That's where I stand. What about you?
I think that makes sense. But I also understand why the narrative is there, because for one, the team has talked about it and said we need more killer instinct. I mean, coming out of, you know, up 3-1 on Montreal in that playoff series and then blowing it. You know, it's natural that becomes part of the conversation around the team. Like, they created this.
Right, but they added quote-unquote character players, and it did not help them at all. Like, they added Nick Foligno for quote-unquote, like, character. They added Joe Thornton for character. Like, they have Wayne Simmonds. Like, ultimately, to me, it's talent. You need better players. I don't know. Like, the other thing is, like, they need their better players to be better than they have been when it matters most. They need their goaltending to be better than it has been when it matters most. They need their power play to be better than it has been when it matters most. Like, to me, those are things that are more important.
But yeah, but the question, Jonas, is just, why are those things failing at the important moments? Like what is that a character defect in this team? And how do you fix it? How do you make sure that it doesn't come apart at the seams when you're in an important moment?
I can't say that that's a character defect. I just don't have any way to quantify that. And I think what I've seen in sports for so long is, like, we think one thing about a person or a player along those lines, and then they do it, and it's like, well, that's not an issue anymore. Like LeBron James early in his career, people are like, well, this guy can't get it done. Michael Jordan, like, maybe considered the greatest winner of all time for the first 7-8 years of his career, was like, this guy doesn't win anything. All these nice dunks don't mean anything. Like, he can't win. And then it's like, well, then he wins a bunch of titles, and now he's considered, like, the winner of his generation. So, I don't know.
All right, I got one we can end on here, okay?
Okay.
Darren asks, what would have happened if the Leafs had not waived Abe Kubel when they did, and were at the 50 contract limit when Samsonov got hurt? Would they still have been able to sign a goalie in time for the game against Carolina? Or would they have had to wait for what waivers process to play out first? Waivers doesn't help them. I mean, unless someone gets claimed, right? So I believe the answer to this is they would have had to find a way to get rid of one of those contracts on their 50. And if you look at who's on that list, I mean, there's a bunch of Marley's guys. And normally what happens when teams run up against the contract limit and they want to make a move is you call another organization and say, we'll give you this AHL player. We'll give you, I don't know, Max Ellis or whatever. Like, you know, some guy who's deep in your organization who has an NHL contract. Who's like, we need to shed a contract. Here you go. And you just need to find, there's probably an email list that, you know, Kyle Dubas could send out an email to every team in the league and say, who wants this guy? He's free. We need to shed a contract. It's not an ideal situation to be in, but that's what would have had to have happened before they signed Petruzzelli to the contract.
Or they could have just signed an amateur goalie for the night.
Yeah, but it's tricky, right? Though, on the road in Carolina, getting an amateur goalie down there in the last last minute notice. It's a bit
different.
Well,
they have like one of these U of T guys who practices with them sometimes. Like you just bring them, right?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, it's not ideal. Like,
but the team would have flown the night before. Like they flew after they played Boston at home.
So, right, but it's not impossible to get a flight.
So you're getting some U of T guy on a plane. Anyway, I mean, yeah, that would have been the other option. But I think we would probably try and just disappear a contract really quickly to somewhere else. I mean, I look through the 50 contract, who's on that list, and look at who they could have just disappeared. And that's probably
not Max Ellis. I like Max Ellis.
I know. So I was reluctant to put his name out there because he looked really good in the preseason. I looked at the list, Jonas, and to be honest with you, I had a hard time deciding which one I would want to get rid of. There wasn't like one that was really obvious. It was like, I'm ready to give up on this guy.
Yeah. Maybe SDA.
He's been good. Mm-hmm. He's been good. Yeah. One of our writers is actually working on a story on him. So
I just don't like, is he an NHLer? I don't know. But I mean, he's only 22. I don't know. Like there's not anyone. These are all pretty like interesting prospects. Gogolev.
Yeah, the guys that have NHL deals are all... Well, they gave Curtis Douglas an NHL deal, right?
Yeah, but like...
No, I know.
I'm not a believer, but he's interesting. Like, he's growing. I don't know. We saw with Mason Marchman, a guy who couldn't skate became an NHL player.
You know what I actually think, Jonas? I think the 50 contract limit is too low. I think it should be higher than that. I think it should be 55 or 58 or something. Because you have your... Let's say you have 23-man NHL roster. We're going in the weeds again here. And then you have some injuries, so then it goes... sometimes you can have 26, 27 players around the NHL team. It doesn't leave a lot of other guys with NHL contracts. You factor in injuries, like Joseph Wall's taking up an NHL contract right now. I think there should be a little bit more give. Like, you should be able to have at least, like, 55 to account for injuries.
This is a naive question, but why does it need to be 50? Like, why... Why couldn't it be 100? Like, why do you put a limit on it?
I think they don't want teams to like hoard a whole bunch of players.
Yeah, right. I guess that would be bad for the players in certain situations, right?
Yeah. It's a good question. I don't know. I've never asked anyone that question, but I believe it's the same thing with why does waivers exist? It's because the players don't want to get basically hoarded in the minors by an organization.
Right.
All right.
I love when we get deep into the weeds like this. That's great.
It's fun.
Yeah, it is. All right. Well, James, that's it. That's all we have for the day. So the Leafs play Tuesday against Vegas, and they have a back-to-back Pittsburgh-Vancouver. And then the following week, they play in Pittsburgh, home to Jersey, home to Buffalo. Some interesting teams coming in. Pittsburgh really struggling.
Here's another question that I think that would be relevant for you, because I'm assuming you'll be writing about Liljegren here soon. One of our listeners named Kyle wants to know, why does Liljegren use such a long stick? So that could potentially be something you talk to him about.
All right. Interesting. All right. Well, James, thank you for chatting as always. Thank you to everybody for listening. We appreciate it. And that's it. Goodbye. See you later.
See you, Jonas. Thanks for listening.